seat, sit back, and relax, because you are listening to Real Talk Radio, where the talk gets real.
Dark Side of the Ring, the ultra-violence of Nick Gage Review.
Welcome, everybody, to Real Talk Radio. This is Real Talk Wrestling. It's your boy, Justin JLB. And Vice, Dark Side of the Ring, is back. And today, I am not alone, as we will be reviewing Nick Gage's episode. This will be episode 2 of Dark Side of the Ring. But before I get any further, allow me to introduce to you my wrestling partner in crime to review this episode, Mike. How goes it, good sir?
I'm all right. So yeah, just looking forward to, I was looking forward to this season for a very long time. There's a lot of good episodes that are approaching. There's been already the Brian Pillman one, which was great. And of course, now there's the one on Nick Gage, which I think it's called The Ultra-Violent Life of Nick Gage.
Which makes complete sense. You know, Nick Gage, I've seen certainly a lot of his CZW, well, not a few CZW death matches and hardcore matches that, of course, he's been in. Never really knew the story. I just saw his matches and were like, oh, this guy's a crazy maniac. So really excited to actually see a full-fledged documentary on it.
Yeah, and a guy like him is an acquired taste because of, I mean, like, not everybody is into the whole deathmatch genre. I mean, me personally, I'm a fan of the whole deathmatch genre, like RIP New Jack, who just died a couple of days ago. So that's a treat for him. And he was one of the reasons why I was into the whole deathmatch thing, because like he used to take stuff to the extreme. And that was like in the past. And then people like Nick Gage, they took it to another level of extreme. And that's why this documentary was made, to show you how crazy some people can really be in the ring.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's it. I did, but just out of curiosity, Nick Gage never faced New Jack?
Not for, well, I don't know personally. Maybe they have, but I mean, there's hundreds of matches that each guy has wrestled. And
that's fair.
Okay. If they have wrestled, I'm pretty would have brought it up in the documentary, though, because of they already did the one on New Jack, and this way they would have just brought them back together.
Yeah, no, that's very true. But wow, that would have been a crazy hardcore matchup. So basically, in this documentary, there's not that many interviewers, right? We only have
Brett Lauderdale, John Moxley, David Arquette, and
Nick Gage and his wife. Or
yeah,
his girlfriend.
His wife, I think that's about it. I believe anybody else was interviewed, actually.
No, that's it. So they begin basically introducing you to, you know, Nick Gage. And they end up technically, well, really, they kind of start off with Nick Gage being this hardcore deathmatch guy. They show a few clips and they really start talking about, well, Mox bigs him up, first of all, right at the beginning. He starts, you know, mentioning, you know, when I first met Nick Gage, they had this match together, and that's when he talked about the pizza cutter incident, where he cuts him with the pizza cutter on his forehead and then on his mouth.
No, that was Moxley, David Arquette.
It was also Moxley.
No, but David Arquette was the one that got it in the mouth, not Moxley. Moxley and the pizza cutter.
Yes, he did. Mox talks about their first match as Gage broke out the pizza cutter, and he felt it was going to be a safe spot with some magic to get what they wanted, but Gage legit cut him with the pizza cutter. The crowd was going crazy, and Gage was getting up with them and decided to also put it on Mox's mouth.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. No, I'm just letting you know. I wrote it down there. But yeah, so that's when we first hear about the pizza cutter and how crazy Nick Gage is with that. And Moxley kind of describes, like, I liked the feeling of doing this kind of hardcore wrestling, the reaction from the fans. And, you know, afterwards, going to have a cigarette and a beer while, you know, attending to your wounds.
Yeah, so, because they said they don't do it for the money. Nobody does this for the money. There's not very much money to be made in the underground scene. So he was like, he just does it for the rush. Right? Like, he's like, there's nothing more than he likes than to be in the locker room with half of his blood gone, with a cigarette in his mouth and a beer in his other hand ready, like shaking hands with the other guy.
That's it. And Moxley goes to an extreme and says, you know, Nick Gage and these hardcore wrestlers really do tell a story in the ring. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's a bit biased. I don't feel like there's really, you're telling a story in the ring. I appreciate your art and what you do in the ring and the amount of pain you can take. Your pain endurance is certainly something pretty crazy, but I was kind of like weirded out by him saying, yeah, these hardcore wrestlers tell stories in the ring. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
I'm a big fan of the whole deathmatch thing. I said, I'm a huge fan, and I don't think he's storytelling in a deathmatch at all. I just think it's just two guys beating the shit out of each other and using a lot of weapons and light tubes and glass or whatever, thumbtacks and pretty much just whatever, barbed wire, stuff like that. And I don't think there's any story that's being told. I just think it's just brutal, and it appeals to some people. It might not appeal to some others, but I'm a fan of it personally, but I don't believe there's any storytelling in a deathmatch at all.
I guess you could say one of the stories that was told is when he faced, Nick Gage faced a German wrestler for a tournament of deathmatch.
Yeah,
by the name of, Thumbtack Jack, where Gage took a spot, and he went over he broke the light tubes, but one of the light tubes got it ripped his skin right near his like torso almost, or kind of his upper armpit area.
I think he sliced his artery.
Yeah. And this guy was like bleeding to the point he couldn't continue. Well, he wanted to continue the match.
He literally asked them to tape it up so he can get back in. It up. Literally, he just asked them to tape it up. Like, I remember, like, Sabu and Terry Funk had that barbed wire massacre match, and Sabu sliced his bicep wide open, duct taped it until the end of the match. But this is a sliced artery. Like, you can die. And I mean, it is called a death match.
For seven minutes.
Yeah, he did die. And like Moxley said, death match is just a gimmick name for it. But he legit did die after a death match. So, yeah, I mean, like, They did say, if anything, it did boost up his credibility afterwards.
No, for sure. He definitely gained notoriety for that, being as hardcore as he was. But I mean, you know, he's down for the cause, though. He even said something along the lines of, you know what? At the end of the day, I don't care if I'm going to... Like, I think Brett even was the one that mentioned it, because Brett Lauderdale, his best friend, or one of his good friends, was a referee during that match, and he recalls Nick telling him, saying, listen, I don't care if I die, or he said Nick doesn't care if he would die in the ring. He likes it. He loves the adrenaline so much that it's something he would definitely want to do, and would be okay with, as long as he died for a good match sort of ordeal. And Nick agrees with that.
Yeah,
as well,
so. I mean, like, Dick was saying that, like I said, like, he wants to be taped up. They wouldn't allow it because it'd be helicoptered out of there. But when they asked him at the beginning, why does he like doing death matches? Because of he's crazy, first of all, to be able to like something like that. And also, he says his pain threshold is really high, so he's able to tolerate.
It's got to be, for sure, because the amount of, you got to love pain. It's got to give you something to, you know what I mean?
When you slice your artery and you literally get up and walk back, like, because I know my body, I'm like, still, most people would just be laying on the floor, like, out of it, like, feeling they're about to pass out. This guy's just getting up and walking back and still willing to finish the match. Like, he even knew, because he says he knows his body and he knows his pain level. And he's like, that was, like, yeah. And he was still willing to finish anything like that. Like, he's that type of guy who he's down with the cause that much.
That's it. And so then they kind of bring you to his childhood, right? He says he was kind of known. He liked wrestling because his dad used to play Saturday night's main events on Saturdays when he'd go to his dad's house. He and his brother, I remember his wrestling name, Justice Payne.
Chris.
Chris, that's it. Him and his brother Chris would do wrestling backyard things. He said they would even like film it, you know, kind of the old school. Even I used to do that stuff, not what they were doing with light tubes and barbed wire back then.
Yeah, we all like body slammed each other onto the beds and power bombed each other.
That's it. And he mentions he even got influenced because of the Cactus Jack Terry Funk barbed wire match in New Japan, death match.
That in ECW as well was a huge reason why. And that's what popular, like, I think ECW is like what began popularizing the whole hardcore genre. And then Japan just took it to the next level, which they tend to do in every type of wrestling.
That's it. And then you basically, I remember Mox. Yeah, so then this is where I think Mox gave the comment, not Mox, but Gage rather gave the comment that he was trying to make it with, he was trying to go to like ECW, but ECW said like he's a bit too crazy with doing this, these light tube stuff. And so he just basically said, well, listen, yeah, you guys are just messed up because this is what the new school does. Like, you don't know hardcore. I'm more hardcore. And that's where he kind of ended up joining CZW and doing a lot more matches for CZW as well, which was big back in the early 2000s. That was the main hardcore spot.
Yeah, like 2008, maybe like 2006, maybe I'd say that's the hottest time for it because they had these great tournament death matches back then. They were just wild because, like Moxie said, like the match that Nick Gage had where he tore, where he sliced his artery, like that was in the middle of some field somewhere where he's like, it was like a Woodstock death matches where it was just pretty much a bunch of guys out there with their vans getting drunk, smoking weed, and watching death matches going on, and like that's the type of crowd that this draws.
Well, that's it, and they only could really do it outside in a field where it's kind of isolated because they'll get shut down if it was in a building, right? So
yeah,
that's fire, generally right? Why. That's it. Speaking of fire, then they go on. Sandra talks about how she was front row when Nick Gage put himself on fire during another match, and I really like doesn't work, bro. It doesn't work.
Yeah, that's what we were taught like, for many years.
It would work if he literally dropped and rolled.
Because
this guy was like,
if you look carefully, the parts of his body that were on fire never really hit the ground. Like he was just rolling like his ass on the ground. He was rolling his ass on like the fire is literally like on like his like in the middle of his shoulder blades, and like that part of his body was not even rolling on the ground. Like he didn't roll correctly.
That's it. Exactly. Like, no, bro, you didn't stop, drop, and roll correctly. Yeah, I mean, I've never been on fire to the point.
Yeah, he stopped and rolled. He didn't drop.
That's the problem. And then, so then we kind of get a little bit more serious. We see how hardcore he is. His girlfriend basically, you know, mentions how she did go to that specific match where he did catch on fire. And that's where she kind of had to turn away. But she generally supports him amongst all his hardcore stuff that he does. Because she's, you know, she really seems like a ride or die kind of person. So kudos to her for dealing with Nick Gage's craziness. Because I feel like a lot of women would just bounce. Because that's crazy. Yeah. But kudos to her.
It got to a point where like all the pain that he was going through, he had to start medicating. So he's like, at one point, he was able to go into the doctor's office and get like I forgot what it was, rock something, and he would be able to get that immediately. But then after a while, like he started taking OxyContin, and he said that after a while, Oxy was expensive and hard to find. So Brett Lauderdale brings up the fact that apparently heroin was like $10 a bag and you can get more the same effects, and that's when he started doing heroin because like Brett said it was like so bad that one time he came home early from a vacation and saw his door hinges off and saw two people inside, and it was Nick and Sandra.
Yeah, that's it. So apparently they at one point in their life they were just, you know, they didn't want to work, they didn't want to do anything, and they were kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Crash padding everywhere. And so they went to his friend's Brett's place, and he's like, bro, get out. Like, what are you guys doing here? He's like, oh, bro, I promise I'll give you money. He's like, no, like, get out. Like, this is ridiculous. You break into my place kind of thing. And they seem like they had a good relationship. Well, they still do. But I mean, come on, you don't break into the guy's house, but clearly
like,
he wasn't in his right mind.
He has to get his door replaced. Yeah. Like how's he going to be able to be comfortable that night with his door hinges off and stuff? And second of all, like Nick was pissed. He was like, it was 10 degrees out there. And like, yeah, but it's not his problem. It's not his problem in the end. He didn't put you in that position.
That's it. And kind of during this time too, he finds out, well, when his dad passes away, but his mother also then gets breast cancer. So he's kind of dealing with that hardship as well.
He was also in bad shape. He wrestled his brother apparently when he was in bad shape, and apparently his brother just wasn't having it. His brother was like stiffing him and beat him in like a very quick squash match. Apparently, like you can tell his brother was really pissed off with
him. That's it. I think he even broke his shoulder or something. Nick,
yeah, like
Nick broke his shoulder.
Yeah, dislocated or fractured his shoulder. He got what was it called again?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's something precious. Yeah.
Painmaker or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, either way, it dislocated his shoulder when he got his finisher move. And that point, he just realized he was in bad shape and nothing was going right. And he had to make some decisions that most people wouldn't make those. But the thing is, most normal people.
No, that's it. And he definitely made some stupid decisions thereafter, too. So this guy's down in his luck. He's, he can't crash anywhere. So he's like, hey, I need money. So he just was randomly like, hey, let me rob a bank.
He said he pussied out of the first one that he was going to. Then he just walked by another one. All right, let me go in and do it. Now, let me remind you all of this is a guy who used to go to the ring with a handkerchief over his face, like a bandana over his face at all times, every time he would go down to the ring. And Moxley says that the one time the guy decides to rob a bank, he just goes in with nothing covering his face. Not only that, looks directly at the camera.
Well, according to him, he didn't know it was there. So
he didn't know it was there, but still, he's looking around. And apparently, he's still dead ass in the camera. And then, because Moxley said he got an email, he was told to check your emails, and he checked it. It's a picture of Nick Cage's face robbing a bank.
That's it. And Mox just makes a joke out of that. Mox, I found, was just hilarious throughout this entire thing. He's a great interview guy. Keep at it, Mox. Keep doing these stuff for Dark Side.
Yeah, he's a fun guy.
That's it. And so basically he ends up getting caught because he was even in the newspaper. He doesn't get caught right away. He ends up going to
Atlantic City
to gamble his earnings because he realizes he's going to eventually have to go to jail. Brett tells him, hey, listen, that's it. And basically Brett tells him, he apparently called him every day. Look, I'll take you in when you're ready. Essentially after 9 days, Nick says, okay, look, I'm ready. Let's do this. I'm going to turn myself in. He gets a Burger King Whopper, smokes a few joints, and he turns himself in. And this is where the relationship between him and his brother I guess it was already kind of fractured, but this is where he completely cuts him off.
Yeah, because now his brother apparently didn't visit him once, speak to him once while he was in jail. Apparently it was he got himself into this mess. He can get him out. Get himself out.
And that's it. So he was sentenced to, Nick was sentenced to 5 years, but he almost served 5 years. He ended up getting out in 4.5 years. And they kind of mentioned that the reason why he was getting a little bit better was because of all the fan mail he got. He didn't realize he had so many fans, and he was really pumped up with everyone, being giving him good words, kind regards and so on. And he felt pumped up by that, started training in prison, laid off the fast foods, and really started getting kind of back on his feet. And that's kind of the motivation he needed.
Yeah, because he didn't know that he had that much love out there. And it made him actually feel like he had something to live for and something to actually get in shape for, to actually impress the people that felt that actually gave him it gave him meaning again.
That's it. And Brett was still kind of by his side, because now Brett, he was a referee back in CZW, but now he ended up being the owner of GCW, which got really big at this point, where it's now the new CZW. It's where all the death matches go, and this is the new spot to do all of that. So we wanted to do a Nick Gage Invitational death match tournament, but at some point Nick ended up falling back into his bad habits, and someone kidnapped him. It was doing well for a while, but he fell into bad habits. Nick says that you can't run away from the problems. It was a very kind of sad moment. I was like, damn, I thought it was a redemption story.
Yeah, but then he also apparently falsified piss.
Yeah, he was falsified for using someone else's urine. And he said that there was some kind of other device that was used, but they don't really go into detail.
They did eventually say that there was a device. I don't know what I mean by that. I don't know if they mean he had a Visine model or something with piss and whatever. Mm. But either way, you're trying to use somebody else's urine, and that doesn't fly if you're on parole.
No, that's it. Absolutely not. And so he ends up going back for another 2 years. And crazy.
Still got support.
And he still got support. He did the 2 years like a champ. Brett was still there for him. Brett was still there for him, although he was angry at the guy, but he ended up bringing him back to GCW. This is where the MDK whole thing, Murder, Death, Kill Gang, started happening. Yeah. I got to be honest with you. At first, when I was watching it, it looked like the MDK was MOX.
Yeah, that's
what I don't know what.
But then when you said the very beginning, like he's like MDK, then I'm like, okay, never mind. I thought it was a Moxley shirt too. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, like that's actually a very cool name for a faction. I do have to say.
Yeah, no, it and even it though it wasn't well,
because it was the fan base that the faction's its fan base. I mean, like it reminded me of something that was actually a dumb thing that happened in IWS Federation Montreal here. There's a guy, Sid Vicious, was there with PCO one time. And they were saying, like, if anyone wanted to be their fans, they were fans of the new shit, because that's what they called themselves. Don't know why.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it was, like, yeah, he was, like, saying, if you want to be part of the new shit, just jump on the ring apron, and if you want to be part of the new shit, you have to take your shirt, take it inside out, and put it on, now you're part of the new shit, and, yeah, but this was, like, very, like, remind me, this was, like, the new shit done right. That's what I mean. Like, this worked because, like, when you see the fans out there, they're fully in this guy. It's not just some dumb gimmick out there. It's actually, like, a lifestyle because, like, these people got him, like, they gave his life meaning again for a guy who was, like, down on his luck. So, like, throughout all the support, it gave him redemption somewhat, and the fans still supported him through everything.
That's it, to the point where people were, he had fans all over the place, people were buying his shirts everywhere.
Yeah,
so
MDK
that's great.
Australia, MDK 50 states, yeah, like.
Yeah, and then, so this is where, so his popularity is back, again, he has a lot of fans, and then this is where they talk about the, I'll guess I'd call it the infamous David Arquette, Nick Gage death match.
Yes, no, David Arquette mentions the fact that he really wanted to redeem himself for the WCW incident where he won the WCW title, where a lot of fans are very upset with that. And I mean, like, I'm over it, obviously. I mean, like, I thought it was dumb, but I mean, like, I can understand why they did it. They did it to promote WCW, to promote the movie, to get some more exposure out there. I mean, then again, they made a movie that probably only wrestling fans are going to see anyway, so I don't think it was going to attract most people. And also the fact that, like, Russo will defend this, that, of course, he didn't beat a wrestler for it, but still, it was a top title that many wrestlers didn't, who are deserving, didn't have a chance to win that, yet David Arquette did. So he felt like, as a wrestling fan, this is why I respect Arquette. He said, as a wrestling fan, he wanted to make it up to everyone. He wanted to prove himself. And I think he could have proved himself by wrestling a lot of other people. He didn't have to do... Yeah, they asked him if he wanted to wrestle Nick Gage. He looked him up and he was like, this looks like a perfect opportunity for me to show them. And I was like, really? You don't want to wrestle like somebody else? Like the RVD in a hardcore match or something?
And like, in a death match, out of all things. They basically start talking about it. Well, first they show just like the little clip of David Arquette getting the tube stuck on it in his neck, kind of cutting himself. Well, not cutting himself, but he cut himself.
First he took them all to dinner. He took them all to a steak dinner. And
right.
Apparently he told like he actually said, like, you know, this is not fake. He's like, this is very real. Like, it's real glass. It's real light tubes and all that. He's like, yeah, just don't cut me. He specifically asked, like, hey, I'm an actor. Don't cut me. And then they said, like, there was one time where he shot him in the neck with a light tube. His blood was just pouring out. And one thing I understand was, like, he's like, when I saw him get up, I'm like, all right, scratch. But I'm like, you specifically said you wouldn't cut him. And then you're still going along with it. And then the pizza cutter incident happened.
Yes, so there's the second part of the pizza cutter. I guess the man likes his pizza cutters because he does basically the same thing that he did to Mox. He does it to Arquette. Only difference is Mox can take the pain, and Arquette got really pissed to the point where he decided to, you know, I think he threw like a chair at Nick Gage or something.
He stiffed him with the chair, but then again, in death matches, are you ever not stiffing anybody?
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. So to the point,
Nick Gage was getting furious, and he like judo hipped him. He did like a judo throw, and he's like, "Look, stay down, or I'm gonna effing hurt you."
He stayed down. He's like, "I'm gonna F you up." Yeah, and David Arquette stayed down, but you saw right after the pinfall, he got right back up and holding onto his neck. Obviously, you're asking a guy who he specifically said, "Don't cut me," and you cut him.
Well, I mean, how are you not gonna get cut in a death match though?
Well, I mean, like, you do light tubes across the back. If you get, like, everything across your back, you don't have to get it into the face.
Right. No, that's valid. I mean, sure. At the end of the day, I think Nick Gage had something to prove. So there also was a bonus clip that they didn't show on the Dark Side of the Ring on the episode itself, but it was then released online, where David Arquette had actually wanted to use that footage for his DVD there. I forget his DVD, Don't Kill David Arquette or something. And Gage was like, yeah, okay, I need money though. Like, you can use the footage, but give me some money. He's like, look, I'm not really going to make much money off this thing. Maybe something else. So all in all, David Arquette ended up sending him a king-size mattress. And David Arquette thought it was the most funniest thing in the world, because he's like king of the death match. It's a mattress, so it's comfortable. He's the king. And he just thought it was the most funniest thing in the world. And I thought it was funny, too. I thought it was great. And I think maybe it should have been on the episode, but whatever. I guess it's not needed. Well, he said he has it. So he's like, I have it there, and it's a brand new mattress, so whatever. Why not? I think he still said he uses his own. He still uses his own bed. He doesn't even use the Arquette mattress yet.
That's actually because, but Arquette's right. Like, he is not going to make money off of it and buy stuff like that nowadays. But that's why I'm just sure. Like, well, Arquette is pretty much, I'm sure he's very living comfortably. So yeah, so I'm pretty sure that mattress wasn't much of an effect to him. And then again, mattresses aren't cheap either. So
no, that's it. So then Gage's success continues to skyrocket. He's more popular more than ever now. However, there is some trouble again, as now we find out that his brother had committed suicide. So, yeah.
And that was bad, because like Emma was saying, that his brother was the one guy that had his life together. He had the good job,
the kids,
wife. Yeah, and he had stuff to live for, and he's been like, but then apparently like he was going through some substance abuse and running from the police, and apparently he was on the bridge and just jumped off the bridge.
Yeah, and then what got to me too is Nick was even saying, like, I live, like, it's right in back of my place, that bridge. So I see it every time I leave the house. And I was like, oh, Jesus, So to have to just be reminded of that every time you leave your house is crazy. And it's amazing how things turned out that way. I was not expecting to hear that. I didn't know this guy's personal life. So when I heard that, I was like, wow. Everyone thought, Nick Gage would have been going down that road, and his brother was the more successful one. But it just goes to show you that substance abuse can get to everybody. And depends how strong you are as a human being, how much you can take, how you cope with it, and how you can fight from it. In Nick Gage's case, he kind of got that motivation through his fans. You know what I mean? He had that helping support of Brett Lauderdale and his girlfriend. And, maybe his brother, Chris, wasn't getting kind of any support. So I really like the fact that the story did show you, having a good support system there to help you out.
Because he actually said that, when he was out there, apparently he just landed in L.A. for a show. He found out his brother passed.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he didn't even want to do the show anymore. He showed up to the arena and he saw all the fans. It made him forget all about what happened.
That's it. And that support system of his fans too, the MDK gang and so on. Like, he had a great, tremendous support system around it. His girlfriend, like I was saying earlier, Sandra, she's his ride or die, and she'll literally be there for everything, and that is someone you certainly need by your side. And he had that support system there. So I really like that message that they showed as part of the episode. And they also do mention, because Nick kind of gets somewhat cryptic. He says, like, listen, I don't know how long I'm going to be around for. It's probably going to be sooner rather than later that I will go on. And I think he was just being real about the fact, because he said he's not stopping this hardcore wrestling stuff until he can't wrestle anymore, period. So the guy already did die in the ring and he wanted to go back in. So, you know, I feel like this is him. This is Nick Gage, and he's going to do what he loves. And if he goes out that way, he goes out that way, sort of ordeal. So,
yeah, but just, I do have to say also he finished off by right after his brother died, he actually finished off the match by using his brother's finishing move.
Oh, snap. Okay. I forgot.
Yeah.
That's it. And, you know, that's a great way to pay homage. He was obviously a wrestler too. I don't know if he was wrestling then, during everything was going on,
I'm not
brother?
Sure, because they showed like a picture of him in construction, so I don't know if he was still wrestling at the time, but still, like, he did wrestle, so yeah, it was a good way to pay homage to him, whether he was retired or not at the time, but yeah, it was a good way to pay homage to him because of, like, yeah, it just happened, so let me pay my respects to him.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I mean, and I don't think we mentioned it, but this poor guy, man, first his father dies, then his mother, who had breast cancer, ends up dying from breast cancer. Then, you know, of course, the drug abuse and robbing a bank, obviously not being in the right mental state, goes to jail. Then his brother dies. This guy has been dealt a bad hand, but, you know, he still tries to overcome it. And really liked that message going throughout the entire. He doesn't seem like he seems thankful and relieved of where he is, but at the end of the day, he also feels, I guess, more realistic to the fact, like, look, I know, even Brett, I think, said it, like, look, this is not necessarily a redemption story yet. You know, an addict can always fall in his ways. So this is a continued story, because an addict never really, it doesn't just, like, poof, that's it. You no longer think of the demons that you once had in your life and so on. So it was kind of a realistic approach to it too, right? Because it's not a Hollywood story either, right? The addict gets this, he does this, and you know, he ends up clean and does a rock show. You know what I mean? This is a legit, I like the realness of taking it to
me, yeah. To me, this reminds me of the true Hollywood stories from back. It reminds me a lot of those, because it shows you, like, the dark side, like, it shows you the good and the bad of what goes on. Like, it does show you to, I mean, pun intended, that shows you the dark side of the ring.
Wow, you really had to, yeah. Well played. Yeah, exactly. It really does. And I just didn't like they didn't sugarcoat it, like, he's all good now. You know what I mean? And he's, you know,
it's not like he's a million like that.
And that's it. Exactly. And yeah, and then that's how they kind of ended. They basically end it with him saying that he's probably going to wrestle until he's 60. And this was just a great episode. Like,
I really enjoyed this one a lot. It reminded me
well, I guess, the hardcore wrestling too. New Jack just being hilarious in his interviews as well.
The difference. Like New Jack also had the comedy of his opinions were very
cool. Yeah, absolutely. And it just added, it was more fun. I found this one a bit more fun than obviously Brian Pillman. Brian Pillman was more of a serious story, of course.
It was more dramatic. Like, I don't think I smiled just watching that. So, like, yeah, like, to me, like, that one was just, like, a pure dramatic. And this one was pretty much, if you're going to say movie genres, the first one was, like, was a drama. And this one was, like, a horror movie or a gore movie type thing. Like, this was, like, a gore sequence type thing because of that's what, Jericho being the narrator, he actually said at the beginning, Deathmatch is like a live action horror movie happening right in front of you.
Wow. Yeah. That's it. This one was definitely, I liked how they did that too, I guess, right? Because they mentioned, and the next one's going to be Collision in Korea, which I know very little of. I've only heard a few things.
Well, I only know about it because I read Bischoff's book and was involved with this.
Right. So Bischoff is also straight up too, and he's a tad bit comical as well. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes on. But I think this one was. I don't want to say better. They were different, right?
Well, this one, I'm going to say, like, I enjoyed this one more. But then again, the other one was also spread over two episodes, so it was slower, I think, as well. This one was just, like, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point.
Yeah, that's valid. That's very valid. And also, while I watch this, I just heard that Moxley is actually going to face Nick Gage. Because the Moxley showed up somewhere. I don't have the info, but Moxley showed up somewhere to intervene in one of Nick Gage's matches or something. And it looks like they're setting something up to face each other again. So this kind of like was like, oh, wow. Like these guys have tremendous respect for each other.
And AEW should definitely find a way to capitalize on that.
Man, that would be great, too. That'd be awesome for Nick Gage. They are a bit extreme, but AEW, as known, they can take to an extreme route. I mean, they had Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston doesn't really go too crazy in AEW. So I'm sure Nick Gage can calm down on the hardcoreness, especially if he's going to get a nice little payday. As well, but with also, that too, like, I'm sure that'd be great for everyone.
Does the guy know how to wrestle?
I mean, I don't know.
That's like the question. Like, does he know how to wrestle? Like, there's no weapons involved. That's like,
well, whatever.
Like,
I'm sure Moxley will.
That's why ECW was good. Like, Sandman, not very good a wrestler. Give him a kendo stick, and he'll definitely get the crowd entertained with it. New Jack, give him a cart full of weapons. Have him people. Dudley Boys, put people through tables. Like, that's what people were doing with ECW. That's why, like, example, like, Nick Gage needs weapons. So, like, he can definitely have, like, a hardcore match with somebody, but, like, he doesn't need to he doesn't need to put people through glass and stuff like that, like, five times in a match. Like, he can do it, save it for the finish type thing.
Well, at the same time, though, I think that he knows enough. You know what I mean? Yes, we've seen him just do a bunch of hardcore stuff, but I'm sure this guy knows how to do a brainbuster, a suplex. I'm sure he knows how to go off the top of the world. Like, he does little spots here and there during his hardcore craziness, too. So, I'm sure.
Like, obviously, like, yes, the body slam somebody through the glass and stuff like that, too. So, he has you see him, like, Death Valley driver from the top rope until he conquers like that. So, I mean, yeah, the guy knows enough by just being, like, He needs to know how to actually wrestle a match and the actions, the hardcore for the right parts if he's going to do something on the mainstream. Because if you're going to be mainstream, you can't be too wild.
No, absolutely. And I don't know. Well, we'll see. I mean, it really depends how it's approached, I guess, to Tony Khan, how it's approached to him. And, you know, we'll have to figure out if TNT would allow it or maybe be a pay-per-view sitch. We'll see what happens.
But do you know what federation they're going to have a match in?
Let me check. I'll check here for you. I feel like it was GCW, but I'm going to double check. So it was... Yeah, GCW, Spring Break.
Okay, cool.
So he appears at GCW Spring Break, lays out Nick Cage... So after the later recapture of the GCW World title, Tonight Show, which aired, blah, 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 saw Gage beat Ricky Shane Page to win the world title. So it looks like they maybe might end up doing a world title thing. So who knows? Maybe it just might be on GCW. Because I mean, why would GCW want to give that up too? You know? And they're already crazy enough as it is. So.
They're already doing the whole death. That thing will definitely work out for their benefit. But definitely too bad. Like, they didn't really mention it on the episode to promote the match at the same time.
Well, this just happened. This happened April 10th.
Oh.
Like this. It may. Like it. This I'm sure was this. Obviously, they finished filming already. Sort of ordeal.
No, but like you could put that at the end of the episode. This person, like, normally if someone like passes away, they always have like. This person passed away like at 49 or something, like someone who participated in it. They could have just put a footnote, Nick Gage and Moxley met up. Like, I think Moxley laid him out, then they're going to now have a match. Just a way to plug in.
That's fair. But yeah, this happened April 10th. So they had a month, and I guess they could have put it in, but maybe nothing's been announced yet either, right? Yeah.
I just thought that's very possible. I just thought it would be a good footnote to put in and plug it, but yeah, at the same time, it's not their job.
No, it's not their. Well, I mean, you had Brett there. I'm sure he's still part of GCW. You would think he'd probably mention something, but either way, it was great. I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was fun. I thought it had a message for everybody. It had, you know, substance abuse, how you can overcome substance abuse, and how someone can overcome live through traumatizing moments of deaths of family members. And it gave you that, I guess, strength to kind of pull forward to make you realize, hey, you know, people can go through stuff and still come out of it and somewhat live a better life from it too, as long as you have a great I don't know. I'm just all about the messages, and I love the message completely. And I was amazed. I it's better for me than Brian Pillman. Yeah. And
if you're unfamiliar with deathmatch as well, this will definitely be a good insight to show you pretty much what it is you haven't seen. So it'll either get you interested or it'll get you to want to stay the hell away from it. Like I said, it's an acquired taste. So if you're unfamiliar with it and you want to see exactly what it is that you don't know, this will definitely show you what it's like, and it's definitely brutal.
Yeah. Definitely brutal. I mean, look, it just look, don't, you don't have to like hardcore wrestling. Just, you know, just appreciate the art that they do with it. I mean, whether you want to say it's art or not is, I guess, questionable as well. But just, it's really a telling story, especially from one of the hardcore guys in the business who does hardcore wrestling. I think that's why they, you know, that personal story too will help a lot of people click with it as well. And you don't really have to just know that he's a hardcore wrestler and that's it. You don't have to go and watch his matches afterwards, you know, especially if you're not really that into it. So definitely looking forward to the Collision in Korea. That should be a good time. I don't want to look up any info on it. I'd rather just kind of be surprised. But yeah, any kind of final thoughts there, Mike?
No, pretty much you covered everything. We covered everything. I know what I know from the Bischoff book and like that. So, and I read that book around, I'd say 10 years ago. So still not fresh. So I'm going to make sure that I'm not looking up anything until I see the episode, because I want it to be like all like kind of not new to me, but I mean I forgot about that. Like, I just want a lot of stuff just be like, oh yeah, and stuff I don't know as well just to come to light as well, because I know everything from Bischoff's point of view, but I want to hear it from other people as well.
Exactly. That's it. So I'm super stoked for that. And yeah, man, thanks for, this was a great episode to recap, but thanks for obviously, being on the app as well. Where can they, give you a follow, good sir, just in case they want to chit chat since you're the go-to hardcore wrestler guy?
Yeah, well, if you want me up, my Instagram is at Mike514UFC, my Twitter as well. My, if you want to look me up on Facebook, you'll see it's Mike Sincidas, which is very hard to spell, but you'll definitely see it in there, in the description. So you'll definitely see me over there. And if you want to follow my page as well, I have a page called STS. So just look up STS Shoot the Shit and you'll find my page.
Bam. And of course, we'll have all the links to the doobly doos down below. Won't be a problem there. So, yeah, absolutely. I guess a lot of people have trouble spelling. Yeah, it's a hard name to speak. But yeah, you guys can also, of course, follow me as well. It's Justin JLB, so it's at JLB420 on Twitter. Real Talk Radio, though, is the brand at Real Talk Radio 8. Anchor.fm/RTR, where you can find all the streamables, the Spotify's, the YouTubes, the Apples, the Stitchers and whatever have you. At JLB on at JLB Online is also the Real Talk Radio Online, excuse me, at Real Talk Radio Online on Instagram. We're kind of updating that more, so probably going to do a lot more clips and all that too. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So all those links, of course, will be on the doobly doos as well, for whatever you like, for whatever way you like hearing us. And of course, like, share, subscribe, hit that notification button if you are interested to get updated on all newer episodes. You can certainly do that as well. And this is the closing point for this week's episode. We will be back next week for the collision in Korea, as that should be a good time. And thanks again, Mike. Until next time, guys. Ciao for now.